If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Naked and Unafraid Amazing Race. Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from three people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Aaron Dyson.
I think she's this amazing human being. Never seen anyone like her. The way she talks and looks. She wears these sunglasses, and when she takes them off, her eyes are like the clouds clearing past the moon. Sometimes I just want to cry looking at her.
Hello, everybody. It's episode 110 of Wreckatopia. I'm Chris Atkinson. I'm joined by Aaron Dyser.
Heidely ho, Cinerinos.
I am joined by Jeremy Scott.
What's up, everybody?
You're going to be hearing Scott a lot in this episode.
Yes, you are. Scott.
Yes, again, welcome, chat, who have come out here on a Tuesday. We actually made it on the Tuesday. Aaron went off and watched an eclipse somewhere, and we were worried about him. We were worried about him because, not because of him being able to get back, but because of the apocalypse that would ensue. Does anybody have any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty little expense.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
Me, I go, please, Jeremy.
So if you follow me on Twitter, then you know that I recently, on Friday and Saturday, I think it was Thursday or Friday, one of those 2 days, two of those 3 days, I binged the new Ripley limited series on Netflix. This is based on the Talented Mr. Ripley book that the Talented Mr. Ripley movie from 1999 was based on. Was that 99?
Yeah, 99.
99? Yeah. And also, if you know me at all, you know that I adore that movie. So, of course, I was going to check this out. This is Steven Zaillian, written and directed all 8 episodes. If that name is familiar to you, it's because he wrote a lot of great shit. Schindler's List and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Moneyball, the first Mission Impossible. So he's a man with a good resume, television-wise. His only other limited series, The Night Of, another limited series that I raved about. Mm-hmm. So this is Andrew Scott, who is having a moment and is probably going to be the next Cumberbatch, I think. And I have not seen Fleabag. The only thing I've seen him in that I really remember is Catherine Called Birdie. And he's great in that. So he's playing Tom Ripley. This is the Matt Damon character. And everything's in black and white. I say everything. There's a couple of shots that have some color, like Schindler's List. But this is shot in black and white. And one thing I read the other day that I think is very true is that you could pause any episode of this show at any moment, blow it up, and have it framed and put it on the wall as fine art. and it would work. This is a gorgeous show to look at. Cinematography off the charts. And Andrew Scott, I think, is undeniably mesmerizing in this role. The other thing I'm going to tell you to try and sell you on this without giving you too many details, it does a lot of things differently than the movie, a lot. But his first two murders are similar in nature and location as they are to the movie. But this show, where the movie glosses over the aftermath of the murder and just kind of shows you Matt Damon's character being like, wow, that was weird. I murdered a guy. This show takes 20 minutes post-murder with no dialogue to show Ripley scrambling to try and figure out, okay, that's done. Now, how the fuck do I deal with this body? How do I cover this up? And you see his mind working as he goes over each hurdle. I found it absolutely riveting. Those two particular episodes should win awards out the wazoo. Other than that, I don't really want to say too much, because if you know the book or the movie, I think this show will surprise you with a lot of the choices it makes. I adored it. It's an 85, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes, so clearly not everyone's thing. I know Aaron has seen it, so I want to give him a sec to talk about it too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about everything you said. It is exquisite, the visuals. The visuals just look amazing. I am not necessarily one who sees black and white as better than, like, more artistic than color. So sometimes I get annoyed by stuff that's in black and white and I can't find, like, a metaphorical reason or a storytelling reason. So there was a little bit of that for me, but it's so beautiful to look at. Andrew Scott is amazing. He's incredible in it. And the murders are, for me, those are the reasons to go, or those two murders. They're very much from the, Torn Curtain was the movie where Hitchcock did this. There's a murder in Torn Curtain that is like this, where it's like Hitchcock set out to show murder isn't easy. It's not like, it always looks so easy in movies, but, you know, it's hard to kill somebody sometimes. And so it lives in those murders in a way that feels very authentic and very human. And those two scenes alone are worth the price of admission. I didn't love it as much as you did, but I certainly appreciated it all the way through. So, yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
All right, Aaron, you got a smallie?
Do I have a smallie? mine's more of an innie than an Audi. I don't know if it's smallie or biggie, but I'm going to go with something that is very much me. And look, somebody has to, you know, speak up for those of us who love trash television. And what I mean by trash television is easy just to kind of have on and watch. I started watching Deal or No Deal Island. What is interesting about this show that got me hooked was it is a combination of Deal or No Deal and Survivor. Now, yes, you may go, how do you combine Deal or No Deal with Survivor? And that, my friends, is why you watch the show. I watched Deal or No Deal when it was on. I was struck by the concept of odds and, you know, just the idea of how much do you have to give somebody to, you know, get them to walk away from what might be in their case. There's a lot of really interesting human decisions. But that show got old pretty quickly because it's just kind of the same kind of thing over and over. This show adds in ideas of Survivor, like alliances and those kind of things. So I'm going to try to explain a little bit how this works. Basically, there are tasks where they will go on that will add certain cases to each week's Deal or No Deal play. So, like, they'll try to find the $3.5 million case or the $2 million case. So they find these cases to add. And then the person who does the best at the challenge is immune from going home. The two people who do the worst at the challenge, one of them is going to play Deal or No Deal. Now, the way that what happens then is they play Deal or No Deal. If they make a good deal, in other words, they take more money than's in their case, they get to send somebody home. They just get to pick somebody who leaves the game. If they make a bad deal in that what's in their case was actually more than what they ended up taking, they leave the game. And it adds this really interesting element of human psychology and how you play. And then you add the fact that Boston Rob is on the first season, and I loved watching Boston Rob play Survivor, and he is having so much fun playing this game. I'm really digging it. I'm a reality show guy, competition reality show guy, so it shouldn't surprise you, but I'm having a good time with Deal or No Deal Island, and it is a recommend for me.
I'm glad that you're putting up the good fight for that sweet old underdog, the trash reality show.
Thank you, Chris.
Because it needs it. Oh my God, there's so very few successes when it comes down to it.
My fair share of trash reality shows, but the mashup thing could either be the greatest thing ever, or it could be awful. But I wonder if it's the beginning of a trend. I wonder if we're going to see more like Naked and Afraid, Amazing Race.
Naked and Amazing Race.
Dude, I'm watching that show. I'm sorry. Why haven't they made that yet?
They have actually made that show, by the way, in England. There is, I forget what it's called, but there is a show that is like Amazing Race where they have to find, they drop them off somewhere naked and they have to find their way home doing these challenges and different things and teams, and they're completely naked, and that's in England. But England has naked people on TV all the time. So
that's very true. That's true.
It's funny.
Yeah, and they're gonna have to find a way to put up these shows like, you know, on HBO, so it's like Naked and Afraid, Unblurred, you know, that type. So I will continue on the Andrew Scott love fest, and I swear to God, I watched this movie independently of Jeremy watching. It is All of Us Strangers. Came out last year. I was unable to see this movie before our year in review, but this is a fascinating movie. This is just a fascinating movie. I think it was sold as a gay drama that was, you know, kind of arty and moody or whatever, but it's really a lot more than that. The basic premise is that Andrew Scott is a screenwriter that lives in this apartment by himself. He's obviously, like, you know, he's in his 40s. I don't know what they really consider what his age is in this, but he's definitely, like, you know, he's just living life and not doing much. But one day, someone knocks on his door. This actor, Paul Mescal, who you may have run into and you're into some movies that you've seen recently. I was shocked that Paul Mescal is 20 years younger than Andrew Scott.
Oh, wow.
He was born in 1996, and I've seen Paul Mescal in a bunch of stuff where he's played fathers and stuff like this. And I'm like, man, I did not know there was that much of an age difference. But he shows up kind of drunk to Andrew Scott's apartment, and he's very bold, and he's like, you know, can I, you know, hey, I've seen you look at me. Would you want to have me come in? You know, you invite me in? And Andrew Scott says no on the first night. And then the movie gets super odd because Andrew Scott goes to visit his parents, played by Jamie Bell and Claire Foy, but they're not wearing aging makeup or anything of that nature that makes it makes you realize that, hey, that they're older. They're the age that he remembers them by, basically. And he has conversations with them, and it's almost like, and I don't know if this is a spoiler or not, and I'm sorry if this does count, if this counts as one, but it's almost like he's going back in time and he's explaining to his parents how life is now. And he'll leave these moments, and then he sees Paul Mescal again. He actually wants to see him this time, but Paul Mescal isn't interested the next time they see each other. But of course, eventually they get together, and there is this beautiful relationship that starts, and they are together for the most part. And we keep seeing Andrew Scott going back and visiting his parents and telling them what's going on and everything. This movie is going in a direction you don't quite realize where you may think you know where this is going, but it's not. But you definitely don't. And the movie's very shocking to me, and like, oh my God, it's a really, really amazing movie about grief and loss, and Andrew Scott, man, talk about a guy who is looking, it feels like that guy is about to just break out finally, and everybody's going to know who he is, even though he's been in a million things at this point. It feels like this guy is like laddering up to put potentially being like one of these perennially nominated Oscar guys. So, yeah. I would highly recommend this one.
I agree. High recommend for me as well. Everything Chris said is dead on, especially the way this movie, unfolds, I think is really, really brilliant. The way it gives you its information, is really, really smart. Andrew Scott, like, he came on my radar with Sherlock because he plays Moriarty in the BBC Sherlock, speaking of Benedict Cumberbatch. And he was incredible there. I was like, who is this guy? And so I was paying attention since then. He's in one of my favorite episodes of Black Mirror. He has a Black Mirror episode that he does that's really, really good. And I just found out, I think I told you guys this in the email, that he was one of the voices in Locke, one of our favorite movies. He's the guy that's like, wait, you want me to run the stuff there? Because he was too drunk to drive it or whatever.
Scott. He's got some of the best moments in Locke.
Yeah. So, All of Us Strangers is great. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. On to our big recommend, which is Sing Street, which I'm not sure I even introduced at the top, but, that is what our big recommend is. And it is Aaron's. So Aaron, take us away on Sing Street.
I'm fine. I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
All right, Sing Street. It's 2016, written and directed by John Carney. At that point, he'd already given us Once and Begin Again. Both of those had already come out. So by this point, we know we're about to get another lesson in the power of music. And boy, do we ever. It's Dublin in 1985. We start with a boy in his room strumming a guitar very poorly before he's called to a family meeting that starts with Littlefinger telling his family the money is tight, so they will be sending him to the Christian Brothers Education, whose motto is apparently act manly, and boy howdy do they ever. He walks into school among hard looks from junior hires, fights in the parking lot, smoking in class, and some good old-fashioned forced face farting. He then finds out about the strict black shoe policy that Brother Baxter, who will be playing the part of the hard-nosed religious school authoritarian figure cliche for the movie. Later that day, he's held at slingshot point until he does a jig for the local bully, Barry. It's then back to the family getting together to watch Top of the Pops and discuss how music videos are apparently better than the Beatles. The next day at school, it goes even worse for Connor as he has to go shoeless because he didn't have his black shoes, still had the brown ones, and he's punched in the face by the same Barry the Bully. But this leads him to meet his new friend Darren, who immediately made me very thankful that subtitles exist. Mm-hmm. Connor then meets a creepy girl who stands across from the school and stares at the students, but he has an aha moment and wants her to wants to take her on to do a video for his next for his non-existent band. So it is literally time to put the band together. We meet Eamon, who plays every instrument in existence and has a dad who is in a cover band. He then parrots his older brother's Duran Duran thoughts from earlier in the movie and locks in Eamon, whose dad is at a place apparently for alcoholics who hit their wives and kids and apparently neighbors. Their next stop is to meet Ingig after hearing about him through some casual racism from Darren. And then Larry and Gary see the ad at school and join up since they seem to exist exactly to fit those parts of the band. Congratulations for finding Larry and Gary. They decide to name the band Sing Street instead of The Rabbits because Sing Street, of course, is the name of the movie. So it has to be that.
That's right.
As Eamon, as Eamon's mom has some personal time, they play Duran Duran's Rio. And whoa, wait a second. These guys can actually play, so we don't need a learning montage. Yay! Connor's brother then educates Connor on originality while remaining completely oblivious to the fact that he will burn to death in a bear suit someday. Cut to they're writing their own music. The riddle of the model comes together pretty quickly, and so they set up a time to record with the voyeur girl that we met earlier. We cut to the video shoot and a conversation on fashion and who isn't allowed to wear a cowboy outfit. And wait, are those storyboards? These kids did storyboards for their video in 1985. I love them. Larry the Bully comes by. I'm sorry, Barry the Bully comes by, and we get, there's too many Aries. Barry, Gary, Larry, there's so many. comes by, and we get a visual representation of the truth that hurt people hurt people. The video shoot goes off without a hitch, and we get the full version of the amazing riddle of the model. Connor then gives Rafina, who is the girl from across the street, a bike ride home and takes his sweet time so he can woo her. But some older jerk face shows up in a convertible to take her away with his car and his stubble. Connor's brother imparts some more wisdom about Phil Collins, and then Connor heads over to Emmons' house to do some more writing. And the second song is somehow just as good as the first. It's so good that Connor immediately grows blonde hair out of the front of his head and develops an addiction to guyliner. Brother Baxter, however, doesn't dig it, so he invites his quote-unquote pretty face to his personal bathroom. But when Connor decides not to, he chases him to the main bathroom and forcefully cleans the makeup off in the sink. Meanwhile, Rafina has decided his name is Cosmo, for some reason, and she wants him to write a happy song. It was also in this moment that I learned that brown bread is Cockney rhyming slang for having a dead father as a way to quickly do character exposition cliche.
Yes.
Cosmo's older brother then tells him that The Cure are kind of a happy, sad band, and they listen a bit, and they are so good, Connor immediately grows poofy hair. They then record the video for the third song, and Rafina decides to go all method and jumps into the river, even though she can't swim because it's art and it has to be authentic. So she gets saved as Connor jumps in after her, and he goes in for a kiss, but then ruins it by mentioning the older dude before he and Rafina stare into the ocean and try to spot whales. The country, not the giant swimming mammals. Another convo with the older brother is next, after which Connor immediately finds a hat and shades for the next day at school. We then cut through some more marital troubles at the house, some sibling Hall & Oates dance bonding, and we cut to the Sing Street Boys doing another video for another amazing song that plays over them all failing at their midterms. Next up is a boat ride with Cosmo and Rafina out to an island to discuss song ideas and life and how much biscuit is too much to have in your mouth during a kiss. Then it's time for yet another family meeting, this time about the split up and who will or won't be staying at Tony's. Then it's time for Jack Rayner to almost steal the movie as he lays out for his younger brother how his jet engine self was the one that cut a path for him to even be here. Cut to the Back to the Future American Prom-inspired video recording for a song still stuck in my head 8 years later, Drive It Like You Stole It. This time, though, we get a fantasy number with everyone playing a role. But reality doesn't quite live up to the fantasy as Rafina has gone to London with the jerk face. Connor does eventually find her and discovers that the London trip was terrible. After she calls him a 15-year-old schoolboy, he doesn't want to talk to her anymore, and he leaves the park through a pack of doves that John Woo must have left there. So it's time to write another song and prep for a gig by hiring Bully Barry to be their roadie. The gig goes well, and all the complicated boys and girls seem to be enjoying themselves until they decide to do a slow song. But it's okay, because the movie will use it to montage Connor's feelings for Rafina and her finding her way back to him by listening to the song in her room. They finish the set with Brown Shoes, which is an absolute takedown of Brother Baxter that includes cutouts of his face for everyone in the crowd to wear. So after burning down any chance he had of attending that school anymore, Connor gets his brother to take him and Rafina to their boat to go to England with a pocket full of demo tapes, pictures, and apparently no sterling. As Connor's brother celebrates back on land, Connor and Rafina start to navigate the foggy, uncertain future. And after almost running into a ferry and killing them both, they follow that ferry to what will certainly be an adventure, if nothing else. And that is Sing Street. What did you guys think about Sing Street?
Was it a ferry?
I think so.
I thought it was just a big ship. I kept thinking, when they turned to follow it, I was like, what if it's not going to England, man? What if it's going to America? You guys are screwed.
They set it up earlier, I think, in the movie. They mentioned that ferry.
That's right.
And all the people going on it. And yeah.
Yeah. All the people are Irish going to England on that boat. Yes.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. I love this movie. I watched it in theaters back in the day. I had not seen it until now. Just some passing notes on this movie. I love Aidan Gillen at the beginning of this movie, who's explaining to the kids what's going on. And Connor is like, it's like, am I being taken out of school completely? And he's like, no, you're being taken from one school to another school. And then, and then his brother Brendan makes a sick joke about the new school's Latin motto. And he, you know, it's like, does the, like, does we rape students here or something like that? And he's like, no, it doesn't, Brendan. It means act manly. I love that. I love how he's so matter of fact about everything in this. He is clearly switched off, by the way, in that marriage and everything. He knows that he's at a turning point in his life, and he's kind of, he's a sad character, but you can see hope for him kind of by the end of it, I guess, even though he's sleeping on a cot next to the bed by the end of it. But it feels like he's someone who has resigned himself to where he is. And I think it feels like, I don't know why it felt hopeful to me. It's maybe because of John Carney himself, because everything he does in this keeps the conflict at, you know, at bay. It's never really outwardly there. I love how Connor takes Brendan's words to heart in many parts of this movie, including, of course, like going through that whole thing about Duran Duran and John Taylor and all that stuff later on that impresses Eamon enough to lend him the instruments and everything. But, you know, and then Brendan has that one line in there where he's like, what tyranny could stand up to that, when he's talking about music videos. And that's sort of where that sort of driver for Connor in this movie is, that he's wanting to make music and music videos. Not only he's standing up to tyranny, he's got bullies and he's got the, you know, brother Baxter, and of course he wants to get the girl. That's the main thing, he wants to get the girl. I love Connor's confidence and self-respect throughout.
Yes,
that's one of the things that I think other movies, like the cliche movie, is that, oh, he doesn't know how to do things yet, so he's going to be awkward and be very shy and all this. He's not shy. He can be bullied, but he's very confident all the way through. And I love the scene too. It's later on where it would be easy for him while Ruffina is putting him down, essentially, to just stay there and be like, but you like me, right? You like me. And he's like, I'm going to go off and go to my band. And she's like, I'd like to hear about it. And he's like, no, I don't want to tell you about it. There's a very brief shot I thought was really funny of Eamon's mom taking time to get her vibrator ready. I thought that was hilarious. They're sitting there playing Rio by Duran Duran downstairs, and she's just like, I'm putting batteries in my foot. She closes the door with her foot. Brendan, once again, you mentioned him stealing the movie. I think he does, by the way. He has that great line where he says, you don't need to learn how to play, you need to learn how not to play. I love that line. I love how awkward and clumsy that first video is. They're knocking shit over. They keep moving stuff around, and you know, they're not quite confident in how they're doing it, but they're learning. That's the point. And I love that. I love how very 80s VHS it is. there's the line, what was he listening to? He's talking about Rafina's boyfriend or whatever, and he's like, what was he listening to? It was Genesis. He's like, oh, he won't be a problem. It was like, no woman can truly be with a man who listens to Phil Collins. Now, I don't know if that's just a cheap shot at Phil Collins. I love Phil Collins and Genesis, and maybe to the point that they haven't listened to the Invisible Touch album yet, that's the reason why Brendan's down on him. But I get it. He's milk toast, whatever, but he's come up with a lot of great songs, god damn it. But it's a great line. It's a great line. Anyway, I could have used a lot more Connor and Eamon talking about and making songs together. I could have used another 10 to 15 minutes of that. I think there's a great, what's that?
Amen.
Yes, there are some great scenes of them just together listening to albums and talking about music that I think is great. And the movie could have, I mean, I would have sat there for another 10 minutes listening to them talk about it. I love Rafina jumping into the water when she can't swim. It's for our art, Cosmo. It's for art. Speaking of, John Carney puts all the conflict at arm's length. That can be a positive and that can be a negative. Rafina low-key says she was sexually abused in this movie, and it just kind of, that's it. That's all she doesn't even come out and say it. She just kind of says, this is what happened, and my mom's more attractive than me, so I don't know why my dad would want me or something like that. And that's the end of it. And there's a lot of just like very low key things in there. Like, I don't know if we should be like embrace the subtlety of that type of comment or be like, oh, it's kind of, that's kind of sickening. But I know why he doesn't go there. And it's because it's just going to bring down the positiveness of his movie. And he wants to have the conflict bubbling at the surface. I get it. But that's one of those that's it was a weird way to put it.
I feel like, not to interrupt your flow, but I strongly agree with what you're saying here. It was a little hard for me to see both that and the priest casually saying, "You have a pretty face, come into my bathroom."
Yeah.
Felt like they belonged in a different movie.
Yes.
And I feel like the principal priest was bully enough with the shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl's story was sad enough when he walks by and realizes that's not her family's house. That's a home for girls.
Right.
And realizes she doesn't have parents. I don't know that either one of those extreme moments needed to be there. I'll let you continue.
Yeah. And that's another one that you brought up there was the Brother Baxter thing. There's very low key, like sexual abuse things going on there too, that he kind of, it's almost Shawshank Redemption-esque in a way, the way that scene plays out. So it was very strange. I love Connor's smile after the kiss on the island. I thought that was fun. Like they had the double kiss basically. And then they cut straight to him on the boat, with this like, I can't believe that happened look on his face. I love how, and this is, Aaron brought this up. I love how Brendan officially cracks after the parents announce the separation. I was trying to read some things into that scene, because he's been very cool up to this point. Mm-hmm. He's been keeping all of his anger down. And we've heard a story before this that he was going to go to Germany and then his mom brought him back or prevented him from doing it. And you get the sense that the parents' divorce is one wedge into him finally getting to this point, but then him realizing where he could have been, and that the fact that I got the sense that because he was stopped from going to Germany because they wanted to keep the family together and whatever, and now the family's coming apart and now he's still here. That is what really ultimately broke him. And he was talking about like, I used to be a jet engine and all this other stuff. And I thought that was that's such a great scene. I mean, just that was probably what stole the show for me, even though there's a lot of great things in this. I love Connor's idealized music video in his head when he's doing that, Drive It Like You Stole It. He sees a place for everybody in that video. Everything is positive. This is before he's officially been disillusioned. It's probably a breaking point of his disillusionment at this point, because Rafina doesn't show up, and then she comes back and she's talking a bunch of stuff that he thinks is stupid, basically. And he even has a place for the terrible schoolmaster in this. He's positive for everybody. And then I think that's the official end of him being disillusioned about everything. And I think also, not only is he upset about the fact that she calls him hanging out with a 15-year-old schoolboy, but there's a lot leading up to that too. She says a lot of things that's like, she's very down on herself the whole time. And he's already like, man, fuck you already. And then she says hanging out with a 15-year-old schoolboy, and I'm just like my mom and all that. That was the breaking point for sure. But that was a thing that I got out of that. So this movie's great. There's a lot of things you can pick on for it. That's got it's just very good stuff. So anyway,
I think the movie is way too charming and hopeful to come away with anything but a smile when you're watching it. Mm-hmm. The child actors, young preteen, I don't know how old they are. They're all great. I especially loved the kid that played the producer, the redhead kid. I looked him up to see where he went in life, and he's still doing some acting, but it seems like it's mostly stuff in Ireland and England and stuff that doesn't make its way over here or that I just haven't come across. I was really struck by the kid that played Connor, the lead. And for a good 20 minutes, I had a strong debate about whether or not he was young Nicholas Holt. The timing doesn't line up, but he could play younger Nicholas Holt so easily. He's really, really engaging. I liked what you said, Chris, about his confidence. I used different words in explaining to my wife why I liked this kid, but I said he walks up to this girl, this pretty girl, the second he sees her, he's told no one approaches this girl, and he walks right up to her. He is not shy. He's not afraid, but he is also still unsure how to look cool. So, like, when he tells her the name of the song is The Riddle of the Model, she's like, oh, that's sweet. And he's like, oh, it's not about you. It's about another model that I know. And if he was just a little more savvy, he would have known, lean into that. If she thinks that's sweet, lean into that, buddy. I ultimately think I stopped just short of loving it because of that stuff I talked about earlier, that the heavier stuff thrown in that just almost took me out. And then that allowed my brain to start overanalyzing some of the writing songs and being in a band stuff, because I think it's very obvious that the person that made this movie has been in a band and has written songs. That's clear, not just from what he shows in those processes, but the loving way that he shoots that process. You mentioned the scenes of those two kids writing songs together. And that almost pulled me to love. I have a very good friend that was in the band with me that I was in, and we would go off to the park with our guitars and write songs together. And I remember those moments very fondly. I will say, songs do not come together this quickly for a movie that is showing you the songwriting process almost as real as it can be shown. It sure as hell speeds it up. Now, it has to, because it would be boring if you saw 30 minutes of them spending a week and a half getting this song right. That's not fun. And it's more fun that they just finish the song in one afternoon, and the next time you see them, the whole band has learned it, and they all know their parts perfectly, and they're all great musicians. There's even a bit I wrote down about Connor. In the beginning, they ask if Connor plays an instrument, and he says, I'm more of a singer, really. And then later on, he's just picking and strumming on a guitar like he's Eric Clapton or something. Like, when did he learn how to play it? The movie
including a police-esque guitar riff at the beginning of one of those songs. That was like, wow, amazing.
I really actually appreciate the love and the care that went into showing the songwriting process and the camaraderie of being in a band. And you don't even have to be a good or successful band for that experience to mean something. And I carry those memories. It was 25 years ago now. You know, to this day, I want to go through some notes. Almost all of them are going to be positive. The first one happens to be a question. How is a Catholic school a cheaper option than wherever they were sending him before? I realize we're in Ireland and maybe everything's Catholic, so even public schools are Catholic. But I was like, growing up, I understood Catholic schools to be much more expensive. Anyway, I wrote down a lot of lines that I love. Dialogue. I think this movie is peppered with some really great dialogue. There's a scene where the guy that plays all the instruments and happens to keep a bunch of rabbits is scolding one of his rabbits for always shitting on his bed. And I think it's Connor says, you can't put rabbits on your bed and not expect them to shit on it. And I just thought, man, that is like Yogi Berra-esque life advice. Like, you could. Anyway, I thought that was really funny. He sings Take On Me to the girl when she asks him to sing to prove that he's going to be in a band. He only knows those three words. But then later on in the movie, after the priest roughs him up in the bathroom, when he's walking with the girl, there's like a slow piano version of Take On Me that plays underneath that. And it's just another illustration of how much the filmmaker understands music. And of course, almost all of his films incorporate music as a plot element. But it's just there were several moments like that in here. I love the line when the girl says, my mom's in and out of the hospital. And he says, oh, why? Oh, she's a nurse. Before giving the real reason. I love how the band shamelessly steals the fashion style of every band they mimic in each song they write. So every time they come to school in a new look, like especially when they come around the corner dressed as The Cure. And now we're in our happy, sad era. The second song the band writes, I don't remember the name of it, but it also comes back later in the film as a slower, sad kind of underscore. I don't know how they got the gig at the dance. I feel like the movie went from, let's see if we can get that gig, to they just had the gig, which, again, it probably is not a movie that cares too much about that. But for a principal being one of your main antagonists, I felt like there was going to be some kind of thing they had to do to win that right.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They just
that is a one of the weird plot flaws, I guess, of this movie is that this brother Baxter is such a hard ass about them wearing makeup and all this other stuff. But oh, you can play at our function. That's totally fine. That he seems actually pretty cool about that. In fact,
he does.
There's one of the teachers there is on their side, and I think she's the one that was in charge of picking that. I think they kind of.
I see
a couple scenes of her being supportive of them, and then she's
by the way, well, did you get the vibe that the teacher was kind of into him when she sat down next to him?
I think there's a little bit of like that, you know, enamored kind of thing. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to know what you guys think about the brother not showing up to play a solo after they had that whole scene about, hey, I want you to come play a solo, and he's like, I'll be there, and then he just. That plot just goes nowhere. They don't even ever talk about it again.
Because
I was expecting, when the girl didn't show up at the dance, I was expecting the brother to show up and save the day and rip an awesome solo and further bond those guys together. And it just, that thread just fell apart. Those are all my notes. I really, really liked it. I think it's so charming. And I think if you don't get the right actors for all these kids in the band, then it's not going to work. They really struck gold with some of these.
Yeah.
I think the movie is specifically, and it ends this way with the line, you know, this is for brothers everywhere or something like that. I forget exactly what it says on the screen, but at the end, you know, it mentions brothers. And I think that the heart of this movie is that relationship between him and his brother. And I think it ties in with the other thing you were talking about, Chris, of his confidence and self-independence. Like he has this thing where he likes community. He likes writing songs together. He likes learning from his brother, having conversations with his brother. He likes this girl and wants to spend time with her, but he doesn't need them. He's not codependent with them. And so for the key moment of the movie to be where both the girl and the brother let him down, he's good because it's never been really about that. It's about him. Like even from the very beginning, like and you mentioned a couple instances, but even the very first bullying moment where he's pulled in the bathroom and the kid takes the slingshot out, he does do a little jig and then the kid's like, all right, now you're going to go in that bathroom. He's like, no, I'm not. And he just walks out. And the movie is full. He does that later with Brother Baxter that we've talked about. Does the exact same thing. Nope, not doing that. And walks out. And there's this real self-assuredness and independence of thought that I think the movie is tying into his growth with music and writing music and how that impacts his ability to see the world.
He even says there's another moment later in the movie where they're walking into school and the bully calls him out in front of everyone. And he basically calls the bully out and says, you can only destroy, you cannot create. And he's embraced the fact that creating art like is empowering.
Right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but, that's exactly what I think the movie is saying. And so when we see his brother just absolutely giddy at the end on shore that they've made it, that's because he is living vicariously through his younger brother. He doesn't have that, didn't have that same self-assuredness, that same independence, that same ability to walk away when it would have been his time to walk away. And he's so happy to see that his brother's actually doing it. And so, yeah, so it becomes this movie about an older brother living vicariously through a younger brother who is finding their independent voice through music.
Even though those two kids are fucked, right? Like, we can all agree.
Yes. Yeah.
He's not coming back with a record deal.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that ain't happening. The pictures aren't going to go the right way. And the going into like a label with your demo tapes from Ireland, you're not going to be getting past the desk.
I loved that moment. The brother cheering on the shore. I wanted to talk about it specifically because there's this competition Aaron and I were both in college where it's like a mock Miss America thing with men. Aaron and I were both freshmen, and there were 10, I think, overall people. My brother was a senior, and he was also one of the 10. And you do like a little question and answer, then you do like a talent show, and then I did like a stand-up comedy bit. I placed third.
Mm-hmm.
And when they announced that, my brother, who was already on stage or backstage, let out a cheer. I'm getting chills thinking about it right now. This is maybe the first time in my entire life that I realized he's happy for me. Mm-hmm. He's not, this has nothing to do with him. He's just expressing his happiness and love for me. And so that moment on the end at the movie, when he's cheering for them, that's what he's doing. He's happy. You said it. He's happy for his brother, but he's also that joy is real.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all vicarious. It's real. I almost picked Good Will Hunting as my double feature just because of that moment, because it reminded me of that Ben Affleck smile at the end when he realizes Matt Damon has gone on to live his best life. Really, really good moment. Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to our super secret double feature.
So just like you, I like to save money, and that's why when Mint Mobile came over to our little corner of the internet, I started to pay attention. And let me tell you, something interesting happened. I realized that I think I have an unhealthy relationship with my existing provider. I had to do this thing where it's like, should I try something new? No. I've been with this provider for so long. And then I got to looking at my bill and I thought, do I really want to keep spending this much money when it appears that Mint Mobile can do the exact same for $15 a month? And that's when I started to click around and find out. To get started, I did just what you can do. Go to mintmobile.com/recotopia. And then right there is where I saw the 3-month plans that were like $15 a month. And that includes the unlimited plan. All of the plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, and they deliver all that on the nation's largest 5G network, which is great. Even better, you can use your own phone number. And I'm kind of, you know, connected emotionally to my phone number. Another thing I probably should dig into in therapy. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/recotopia. That's mintmobile.com/recotopia. You can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/recotopia. There is a $45 upfront payment required that's equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan, and additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
You want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, I've got something incredibly obscure for you that I haven't even seen since 1999 when I watched it on VHS with my roommates. And I thought of a lot of films. I don't want to say any of them in case they are ones you chose, because this movie gave me a lot of feels in different directions. I ultimately settled on wanting to double feature a film that captures the magic and family of starting a band. And so I'm going with an indie film called Bandwagon from 1996. The only name in here that you're probably going to recognize is Kevin Corrigan. He played the cousin in The Departed that gets Leo into the crime business. This is about a guy who loses his job and decides to start a band. He starts a band with strangers. None of them know each other. They go on the road in a van. The lead singer is so nervous, he faces the back wall instead of the audience every time they perform. And it's much more of a dramedy, comedy, road trip kind of film than Sing Street, which is more coming of age. But I think they would complement each other really well in terms of that whole, like, that family thing, aspect of being part of a band and that power that comes from creating art. You can actually watch Bandwagon in its entirety on YouTube if you are so inclined. You can also watch the trailer and see if it moves you at all. But I watched this with my buddy Josh, who we talk about a lot, and we both really, really liked it. And I have never seen it or talked about it since, but this movie brought it back into my mind.
Never have heard of this before. Okay. I had two circling in my head, and I think I changed. I was definitely going to go with one, and then I end up thinking about the second one a little bit more and deciding to go with Rushmore as my, my double feature for this. There's a direct correlation with the, you know, making friends with the bully at the end and getting them to do your thing. I didn't know if there were many other connections, because Rushmore is it's a dark comedy. It's a love triangle movie, basically, with Bill Murray and Jason Schwartzman going after Olivia Williams. But everything Jason Schwartzman does in that movie is about getting Olivia Williams. That's the thing. Everything he does in that movie is that getting Latin back into the school, putting on this huge play at the end. Everything is about that. So, he's in one school, he's in Rushmore, and then he's kicked out and he has to go to a trashy public school, and everything, but he still kind of lives at Rushmore throughout the whole thing. But, the other movie that I thought of during this that I was almost definitely going to say it was Be Kind, Rewind.
Oh, wow.
It was another one where you have people who are going out and making things and, like, you know, trying to save their video store and all this stuff. And I haven't seen Be Kind, Rewind in so long. I can't really talk smartly about it, I don't think. But I remember it being at least sweet, and like a sweet movie like this movie is.
For sure. And about the power of family and creating things together. Absolutely. I think that's an awesome pick. I wanted to mention that the older brother, almost on his own, made me pick Almost Famous, the way he passionately talked and instructed about rock and roll and music and art. And there's a lot of parallels in Almost Famous, but I still like the pick that I made.
Yeah. Brendan is definitely the Lester Bangs in this, in this one. So, okay. On to what our homework is for next week. Jeremy, what are we watching for next week?
Let's get sexy. I have chosen John McTiernan's The Thomas Crown Affair.
Oh, my.
With Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo and Dennis Leary. This is like a 68 on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know what the hell's wrong. Man, this movie's great. You may not adore it.
It's a movie that's a remake of a Steve McQueen movie that people hold dear in their heart.
I suppose.
But if they were able to watch it without that in their hearts, they would realize this movie's pretty good too. Yep. So,
this is on Max right now. And it looks like that's about it. If you have a premium subscription at any of the places that roll in Max, then you can watch it there as well. Anyway, I saw part of this the other day, hadn't seen it in 5 years, and I didn't finish it. I was like, yep, that's going on the list. We're going to do this one on the show. I want to dive into it. And so, yeah, I think we have time for a question or two.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Yep.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
What movie moment will always make you cry? Mm-hmm. I was assuming that we cry at movies, but okay.
I mean, there's probably a few others that I would say other than this, but I always thought it was just, I mean, it's just super sad after Mufasa dies in The Lion King and Simba goes over there and nudges him. I think the nudge is what gets me the most out of that whole scene. Because you can really see, and especially the way they animated it, you know, Mufasa is clearly dead, right? You can't say otherwise at that point. And then although this scene has been fucked by Saturday Night Live, the Dead Poets Society, Oh Captain, My Captain scene at the end, when they stand on the desks, of course, Saturday Night Live made a skit where they're all getting their heads decapitated by ceiling fans, but
it's so awesome.
It's awesome. Yes, it is. But the scene itself in Dead Poets Society is awesome. And I want everybody to fucking acknowledge that. Anyway,
Aaron,
I have a couple. Samwise going after Frodo at the end of Fellowship, just it's immediate tears. He's like, you know, I'm going, and Frodo's like, of course you are, but I'm coming with you. And he just will not, you know, leave him to do this alone. And there's something about community and friendship and the idea of being there for someone that just really gets into my heart. And so every time I see that, I cry. Finding Nemo, the reunion and Finding Nemo gets me every time. That's probably just as, you know, a dad who has four sons and, you know, just that idea of something you thought was lost being refound. And then one that will feel silly to most, but it's true. I cry every time at the end of Swing Kids. there is a moment where at the very end where their cry to each other as, you know, these people who are fighting against the Nazi youth program and that kind of thing is Swing Heil. Instead of Heil Hitler, they say Swing Heil. And he has is being taken away by the Nazis. And there's this moment where his little brother, speaking of brothers, picks up his umbrella and, you know, says Swing Heil, like, I'm you know, this means something to me. I'm going to follow in your footsteps. And it brings me to tears every single time.
It's not a movie, but in Hamilton, every time the kid dies and those piano notes start, that song wrecks me, and I cry almost, well, even thinking about it sometimes. And then the end of About Time, if you've seen it, you've probably heard me talk about it before, but if you've seen it, he goes off at the end to run on the beach with his dad as a little kid and spend some time in that memory, and it just, oh.
That Hamilton thing is set up so well too. You know, like the first time we see that kid, he's learning how to count to 10, of course, which comes later on, and they keep incorporating that set wheat enough and all that stuff in it, and it's just like, man, it's so well done. So fucking well done. Over in the comments, we have Up. Yes, that beginning of Up is devastating. Yep. Shaggy Nuts also says Onward, since my dad died. Yeah, that would definitely be a big one. Josh with the jokey one, Uncle got salt in my eye from popcorn at the theater during Lethal Weapon 2. Does that count? Sure, why not? Shaggy also says About Time. Yes, About Time definitely has some moments in that. James says the moment in the modern day epilogue of Schindler's List where one of the survivors gently rubs Oscar's grave. Yes. Not a movie, but Scrubs. Where do you think we are? The end of the Brendan Fraser arc. Oh my God. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. If you're familiar with Scrubs, you know what you're, what that's all about. I had a friend who rewatched Armageddon frequently and cried every time. I guess, you know, Bruce Willis at the end. That's
okay. Yeah, I can see it.
If you're really into that movie.
Daddy.
Yes. Alan says E.T. always gets me. Shaggy also says my girl definitely has a very sad moment in there. And then Polly says Grave of the Fireflies definitely has some sad moments. Guys, all right, I think that's a show. Next week is Thomas Crown Affair from 1999. Remember that, because you will encounter another version of that movie.
Faye Dunaway's in both of them.
Oh there you go. That will do it for this week. We will see you next time. See ya.
Bye guys.
Bye everybody.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Test 1-2, check 1-2.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Echo, echo, echo.
We are here, we are here, we are here.
Now batting for Pedro Bourbon, Manny Mota. Did you watch the eclipse with just a select few group of people, or did you go to a mass gathering? Or
no, my sister's house was in totality, so we just went and hung out with my sister and her family, and so we just went out in their backyard, hung out around, you know, their backyard fire pit, and watched it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was a pretty big one, huh? Pretty big moment, right?
There are so many things that I continue to learn as I get older. You just, like, you have to experience with your own eyes. Like, you can see pictures of what totality looks like, or see pictures of what, you know, this mountain range looks like or whatever. But man, when you see it there in like physical space, it's, there's something special about it. Like seeing the sun go away and then being able to see like the atmosphere of the sun, like how bright the atmosphere of the sun is, all the wispies and all that kind of stuff. Like, man, it was
wispies
just...
Wispies is a scientific term.
That is, yes. That's what NASA uses. They call it the wispies.
I have heard... So almost everyone in my family, my brother, my parents, and my brother's family has been to the Grand Canyon. And I've heard very similar things about that.
Yep.
Chris and I went to see the Redwoods, and I have always said,
yep,
even the pictures we took of us standing next to them don't do justice to how big those goddamn trees are. So I can see pictures of the Grand Canyon. I've flown over the Grand Canyon, and I've seen how massive it is in terms of scope, but in terms of understanding the depth of it, I don't think pictures would ever do it justice. That's just a place I'm gonna have to go. So
it doesn't. It really doesn't. I've been to two different ends of Grand Canyon now.
Oh, awesome.
The first trip was the better one because gives you a little bit closer views of everything. The other one, I think it was the northern rim of it. That's one where you actually have to like be really careful about where you walk and stuff. Like you have to be careful in the southern rim too. Don't get me wrong. There's places there that you don't want to, like, you know, just not be looking where you're going, but the northern rim, like the place that we went, God, it was like just this narrow strip that you were walking down, and there were some places that, you know, if you're not really paying attention, you could just kind of fall.
There's some place out west, in one of the Pacific Northwest states, there's this stone, I mean huge stones, not like tiny gravel, stone road up and down a mountain that can only be done with four-wheel drive Jeeps. And like, you have to like do like 9-point turns at a certain couple places.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like you die if you fall off that road. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't need to go to that extreme. I will say, Aaron, you dodged a bullet on the traffic. Somehow you magicked yourself into the only interstate. Like, the Nashville subreddit is full of people today complaining about how long they sat on 24 and 65 last night. Wow. Trying to get home.
What's funny is that they would have sat in that traffic if there was an eclipse or not.
Yes. It was, I mean, the roads were almost clear for us. It was weird. Nobody was on 70.
Weird. That's weird.
Did you just go early? Is that,
well, did we did go? We did try to get ahead of everybody, but I don't think from what I saw, I don't think there was ever really any problem on 70, but yeah, we watched totality. And then we didn't stay for like the phasing out. So like we packed up and headed out, you know, before the eclipse was technically over.
Most people are going to probably wait until after that. And then even after that.
Yeah. That was the thought was, you know, we'll get ahead of all the people who want to watch the whole thing, need to sober up, whatever the case may be, and you know, get home. So, yeah.
Man, I don't think I'd want to experience that unsober. Like, I don't think I would want to drink for that event. No. I think I would want to experience that with all of my faculties intact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I have a lot of faculties. I'm just saying I would want them all to be working if I were to.
I just know there is a giant subset of human beings who will take any excuse to drink and set off fireworks. Like, it's
absolutely,
it's wild to me. It's just like, you know, here's this thing that's happening. Go get the keg and go get the bombs.
I honestly think it's that goddamn Francis Scott Key's fault for writing them about the bombs bursting in the air like it's a good thing.
I agree.
Now it's become something that we celebrate. Bombs bursting in the air? Why are we happy about this? That line should make us stop every time we sing the national anthem and go, what the fuck, Francis? Like, why are we?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think originally it was intended to be a downer. Like, you know, the bombs bursting in air was, you know, like this kind of like metaphorical downer for the violence that took to get there and the pain. Then, you know, it's like there's this depth to it that's just, you know, now it's just like blow stuff up.
How much? But in true American fashion, fireworks. Ooh, explodey, colorful explodey.
How direct a relationship do we think there is between the gun makers and the fireworks makers? I mean, they're both using gunpowder, right? Like, they got to know each other at least, right?
Hang out at the same conventions.
There's probably some sort of Venn diagram thing you could do with that, but I don't think there's too much, honestly.
Yeah, probably right. But I still think they're targeting the same customers largely.
I would say so. Because the people you hear firing them off on days that are not holidays are usually those people.
I mean, I could give you three or four good arguments against fireworks. Good ones. I don't have any in favor other than we like to blow shit up. That's the only good reason. That's the only reason we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're traumatizing animals, pets, veterans, people with PTSD from gunshot encounters.
Mm-hmm. Well, all because of, color explodey.
My sister was like, why are you guys, you know, coming here for the eclipse? And I started to tell her about totality, and she couldn't get it. And we got there, and her husband were saying how annoying it was that everybody was coming here. And he's like a district superintendent, so they had to close school yesterday and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it's frustrating and whatever. So about a minute into totality, we get a call from her husband. He's like, tell them we were wrong. Tell them it's totally worth it.
That's amazing.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.